So today is the very divine appearance day, following the Mohini Ekadasi. We break the fast with Rukmini's appearance day. So we've chosen one verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam 10th canto. This chapter is entitled Krishna Teases Rukmini. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Sri Bhadraya Nir Uvacha Karhi Chit Sukham Asinam Svaltapastam Jagat Gurum Patimpaya Charad Baishmi Vyajanena Sakhi Janahai. Translation and purport by the servants of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Sri Bhadarayani said, once, in the company of her maidservants, Queen Rukmini was personally serving her husband, the spiritual master of the universe, by fanning him as he relaxed on her bed. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti poetically notes that in this chapter, Rukmini Devi is like a fragrant camphor crushed on the grinding stone of Lord Krishna's speech. In other words, the lovely, chaste qualities of Rukmini will become manifest as a result of Lord Krishna's apparently insensitive words. Just as camphor's fragrance becomes manifest when granules of camphor are crushed by a grinding stone. The Acharya points out that Rukmini is personally serving the Lord because he is Jagat Gurum, the spiritual master of the universe, and Patim, her husband. End of purport. Om Agyantimirandasya Gyanajana Salakaya Chaksu Unvilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namitna Sri Chaitanya Mahabhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadanti Swam Padantikam Jai Sri Krishna Chaitana Pramudatananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhaktivindam Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, today is the very special and very divine appearance day of Rukmini Devi. And Rukmini is known as the Supreme Goddess of Fortune. Krishna had 16,108 queens when he was staying in Dwarka. And the supreme of all the queens was Rukmini Devi. When Krishna was in Vrindavan, at one point, by the arrangement of, we can say, providence or destiny, Krishna was somehow removed from Vrindavan by a messenger whose name was Akrura. Akrura came to take Krishna out of Vrindavan and bring him to Mathura to deal with the political situation in Mathura. King Kamsa had subjugated the throne, had thrown his father Ugrasena off the throne, and had taken over and establish a somewhat of a demoniac rule. So Krishna's mission in this world is yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhutanam adharmasya tadatmaham srijamiham pravitranayam sadunam vinasanaya chaduskritam dharma samstapanartayam sambhavami yuge yuge. So vinasanaya chaduskritam, whenever there is duskritiness or demons who somehow take over, and then the Lord actually arranges for them to be removed in different ways. Sometimes he does it through natural calamities, Sometimes he does it through various pure devotees coming and preaching. And sometimes he comes himself, which he did as Krishna, Ram, the Sringadev, to remove the demons himself, simply by just killing them, destroying their bodies. So in this case, there was a very severe political situation. And so Krishna was forced to leave Vrindavan, which meant he left all behind his wonderful devotees, the residents of Vrindavan, who generally cannot think of anything, do anything, breathe anything, if it's not connected with Krishna. The residents of Vrindavan, their devotion is not able to be understood by any mortal person. It's impossible. No one can understand such residents. All we can do is somehow glorify them and appreciate such high quality bhakti of those personalities who are in the highest of all abode, Sri Vrindavan Dham. And therefore, everything to them is Krishna. And without Krishna, there's nothing. Nothing has any meaning. So when Krishna left, or even before Krishna left, he was somewhat trying to be restrained from going by the residents of Vrindavan. His mother didn't want him to go. His father didn't want him to go. Father, Krishnananda Maharaj, somewhat acquiesced, but his mother didn't want him to go, and especially cowherd boys and the gopis. The gopis even stood in front of the chariot of a crew and laid down, saying that if you want to go, you're going to have to drive over us. This was their love for Krishna. They didn't want to see him leave. Somehow or other, Krishna arranged to get out by his transcendental, what we say, yogamaya potency. And when he was gone, the residents of Vrindavan were thinking, well, he's in Mathura. And Mathura and Vrindavan are like two rooms in the same house. So it's not so far. He's somewhat nearby. And Krishna was somehow or other coming to them in different ways. But then at one point, the political situation got even worse after Krishna killed Kamsa. And then there was more demons, such as Jarasandha, Shishupal, Shava, and Dantravarka, and all these demoniac kings who were just causing havoc everywhere. And at one point, Jarasandha was going to destroy the residents of Mathura. That was his plan, to kill them all, because Krishna killed Kamsa. And Jarasandha was the father-in-law of Kamsa. Jarasandha's two daughters, Asti and Prapti, they married Kamsa. And when Krishna killed Kamsa, Jarasandha was upset because he got his daughters back. He gave his two daughters in marriage to Kamsa, and now their husband was killed, and so they returned back to their father because they had no other protection. A woman is always given protection either by her husband or by her father or by her elderly sons. This is Vedic culture. And so he was personally angry at Krishna. And of course he was a demon anyway. So in so many ways he was thinking how to destroy the residents of Mathura, which was Krishna's family members. So Krishna decided to erect a fort in the middle of the ocean, 96 miles off the coast of the western coast. And so he did. He erected this huge fort, which is known as Dwarka, by his mystic power and his all-powerful nature. And then in one night, when everyone in Mathura was sleeping, he transferred them to Dwarka. When they woke up, they were in Dwarka. They went to sleep in Mathura, and then when they woke up, they were in this other city, which they have never saw before. Somehow Krishna revealed to them what had happened. And so they were there. So Krishna had a deal now, protecting his residents of Dwarka, at the same time trying to arrange for, you know, Yudhisthira to get situated on the throne and somehow deal with all these demons. So Krishna was involved with so many politics. He was really engaged in politics. And so the residents of Vrindavan, when Krishna went to Dwarka, they were really devastated because Mathura was bad enough, but leaving that far away, wow, Krishna's really far away. So especially the gopis, especially Radharani, they were crying, praying, and lamenting, and exhibiting various feelings of separation. And one time Krishna sent Uddhava to go to see the residents in Vrindavan and to pacify them, saying, I haven't forgot you. I'm coming back. I still have a few demons to kill. I'll be back. Don't worry. He assured them in a loving way through Uddhava. But he also wanted to teach Uddhava what is real devotion. Because Uddhava had the personal association of Krishna. He was so close to Krishna. In fact, he had similar body features as Krishna. In fact, if you would have seen them both together, you couldn't tell who was Krishna, who was Uddhava. Uddhava was so much resembling Krishna in all his features. Of course, Krishna has certain distinction features, such as the Srivatsa and the Kastubha Dvamani, which no one else has. But in his bodily form, they look the same. So he was blessed, and he was somewhat happy with his special fortune of being so close to Krishna. But Krishna wanted to say, you think you have devotion for me. Where do you see the residents of Vrindavan? So when he did, he was amazed to see such devotion. Never before had he experienced anything like that. He felt himself just like a fool compared to their devotion. I mean, they couldn't, you know. They were somehow sustaining their lives on one thing. The only thing that kept the residents of Vrindavan alive was one thing. Krishna said, I'll be back. That was the only thing that kept the residents of Vrindavan alive. Krishna said, I'll be back. Otherwise, they had no reason for living. And they used to go to the outskirts of Vrindavan every evening and see if Krishna was coming. And then every evening they would go back very disappointed and unhappy. In fact, Radharani says, Krishna, you are like a merchant who has animals, and you lock the animals in the house, and then you set the house on fire, and the animals can't get out. They are burning in this blazing fire, and they can't get out. Similarly, I'm burning in the blazing fire of separation from you, and you have locked the door with the statement, I will return. I will return. This was Radharani. So this went on for some time. And finally, Radharani, one day, she was standing on the banks of the Jamuna. And she was deeply thinking of Krishna. I mean, deeply, with much lamentation. And then in her deep thought of Krishna, she saw in the Jamuna what she thought was Krishna. It was a cluster of blue lotuses that were there. And Krishna's color is somewhat bluish. So she started to walk, thinking it was Krishna. And gradually she walked and walked and walked and walked and walked and walked. Actually, just before that, she prayed to the sun god with deep, deep prayers. No one knows what those prayers were. And then she was standing on the bank, and then she walked into the Jamuna. And then she just walked over her head into the water. And that was it. She was gone. Radharani was gone. Lalita was standing on the bank. She saw that. She was shocked. She ran and told the other gopis. Radharani had left her body. She was gone. And then all the other gopis, seeing that Radharani was gone and Krishna was gone, there was no reason to live. And they all gave up their lives. But they all reappeared in Dwarka. Because Radharani's prayer was to the sun god. And the sun god is Vibhishwan. And the Jamuna is somewhat the daughter of the sun. Yamaraj and Jamuna are sons of the sun god, Vipashva, sons and daughters, a brother and sister. So what happened was, the sun god took Radharani and brought her to the sun planet, along with Vishakha Devi, who is also a personification of the Jamuna River. And Radharani and the other 16,108 gopis reappeared in Dwarka as the queens of Dwarka. And Rukmini was one of them. She was actually the gopi called Chandravali. The gopi Chandravali became Rukmini in Dwarka, and Radharani became Satyabhama. And all the other queens, the principal gopis, each became one of the principal queens of Krishna in Dwarka. So the gopis could not tolerate Krishna's separation. So they actually gave up their bodies, and by the arrangements of higher powers, they reappeared as queens to be with Krishna. But of course they weren't fully satisfied, because in that mood of Aishwarya, it's different than the mood of Vrindavan completely. But although they were in that mood of Aishwarya, and they were with Krishna, they were in that mood as queens, but still, there was something missing. So that same Chandravali, who was considered the second Radharani, she became Rukmini Devi. And who was Rukmini? She is considered to be the supreme goddess of fortune. She was the daughter of Bhishmaka, one of the principal kings at that time. Very powerful personality. And she heard about Krishna. And she sent him this note that actually, I'm supposed to be my brother Rukmi, he wants me to marry Shishupa. Now who is Shishupa? Right? Jai and Vijay reincarnated as who? The first reincarnation was Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha. In the second manifestation, it was Ravana and Kumbhakarna. And in the third, it was Shishupal and Dantavarka. So Shishupal was one of the demons that took birth from the curse of the Kumaras in the Leela, in the form of Jai and Vijay. Now, Shishupal was a personification of envy. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that of all the qualities, or disqualities, I should say, not qualities, disqualities, envy is the worst. There's lust, anger, greed, pride, illusion, and envy. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, in anger, lust is there. In greed, lust and anger is there. In illusion, lust, anger, and greed is there. In pride, lust, anger, greed, and illusion is there. In envy, they're all there. Haribo. So envy is the worst, because envy is what brings the conditioned souls to the material world. We have this desire to be the second Krishna, and there's only one Krishna. So we come to the material world to somehow try to fulfill that desire and try to become the qualities of Krishna, the controller and the enjoyer. The living entity cannot be the supreme enjoyer nor the supreme controller. So somehow, when one becomes somewhat competitor of Krishna, they fall to the material world and take up that position in a false way and try to control in order to enjoy. That is material life. That is material life. And envy is the foundation of that desire, when one becomes envious of the Lord. And then that envy propels one into the material energy to take up material activities and try to become the enjoyer separate from Krishna. So this is the history of the fall of the jiva generally. Now, envy is simply a perversion of the desire to serve. When one is envious, they want to be served. When one who is Krishna conscious or devoted, they want to serve. Actually, this is the only way to give up envy. Envy can never be destroyed. Prabhupada says all the other qualities, such as lust, anger, greed, and illusion, pride, can somehow or other be dovetailed in Krishna's service, but envy must be given up. Envy is given up simply by humble service to the devotees. If one humbly serves the Vaishnavas, one can destroy that demon called envy. Shishupal, he was a personification of envy. When he was born with four arms, and he was crowing like a jackal. That was his first sound when he appeared in this world. It was horrible. Yeah. Bang like a jackal. But he had four arms, so there was something divine about his appearance. Now his mother, she took him to an astrologer. Now his mother was the cousin aunt of Krishna. She had some relationships. So Shishupal and Krishna were like cousins, distant cousins, but they were cousins. So she took him to an astrologer to get his birth chart read. And the astrologer said, the day he sees the person who will be the cause of his death, two of his arms will fall off. So she heard that. And then she took him back. He was just a little baby. So his first birthday came. So she invited the family members to come. And she invited Krishna. Krishna says, you don't want me to come. It's nice you have a nice baby because, mothers, they really attach to their babies, They say, oh, look at my baby. He's like the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he appears. Those of you who are not mothers, you can't understand this. But anyway, mothers, when they see their baby, it's like Bhagavan Shri Krishna Ki Jai. They worship babies. It's like their life and soul. And so, she wanted all the family members to experience her happiness of her new child. So she took the baby, and she had a big program, and she invited Krishna. And she insisted. She said, Krishna, it's your cousin. You should come. He said, I'll come, but you're not going to like what's going to happen. So he came. And then Krishna was there, and he looked at the baby. And then two of his arms fell off. His mother was shocked. Krishna, you're going to be the cause of the death of my child? Krishna says, I don't want to kill him. I have nothing against him, but he hates me. In fact, one of the first words that Krishna's Shishupal said when he came out of the womb was, you rascal Krishna. That was the first thing he said. Some babies, they say, Mama, Dada, Gaga, Ooh, Kaka, so many nice things. Krishna, his first words were, you rascal Krishna. First words of a child. It's not very nice, is it? Anyway, so Krishna says, he hates me, but I'll give him a benediction. He can blaspheme me up to 100 times. And as long as he takes a break, then he can start from one again. But if he goes over 100 without taking a break, then we're going to have to do something. So, Shishupal was always in that mood. So when he found out, he wanted to marry Rukmini. And Rukmi, the brother of Rukmini, wanted to marry. So it was all set, but then she sent this letter by way of a brahmana to Krishna that, I'm supposed to, be married by Shishupal, but I don't want to marry him. I want to marry you. What girl would want any man in this world? What girl would want? And then there's one prayer I'll read in here that describes how she feels towards any man in this world. And then she says, you are the perfect husband. Only you are the perfect lover. Only you can satisfy a woman's real heartful desires. She praises him in so many ways. She sends this beautiful letter. She says, I will be going to the goddess of Ambika, and I will go for puja to worship Ambika, and I will be escorted by my parents. So you should come at that time. And come and snatch me away. Right? Kidnap me. So, Krishna, he liked the idea. So he came, but he also told Balaram that there's going to be some trouble here, because I think Rukmini and his armies are going to try and stop me, do something. So Balaram came with the armies to protect. Krishna came and he snatched her away, right in the midst of all the assembled, you know, personalities. What's his name was there? Shishupal, you know. And then there was a big fight, and Balaram's army destroyed him. And Rukmini got away with Krishna, and Krishna married her. This is a shortened version of the actual story. It's a beautiful story. The letter she wrote, you can read that letter, so sweet and so full of devotion. How we can understand what it means to be devoted to the Lord when we hear the beautiful prayers of Krishna's devotees. How that that Krishna captures their heart and mind 100%, and they can't think of anything else, and their love just flows like a raging river towards Krishna. From this we can understand what is real bhakti, what is real love. So now he's with Rukmini and they're married, they're living in Dwarka, they're very happy. Now Krishna wants to always somehow or other, this is Krishna's plan, he always wants to increase the devotion of the devotees. He likes to do that. He's not happy to see you for where you are. He wants you to come up to the next step. He pushes you along in different ways. If you get complacent in Krishna consciousness, then Krishna somehow or other arranges some little nudge to move you forward. Some way or another. And if you resist, he keeps trying. But then if you resist too much, he lets you go. Because then that means he's convinced you're not interested. But if you still have a little desire, he keeps trying. And so what happens was, he decided to tease Rukmini. And he says, read this here. They were together, and she's fanning him. He's sitting on her bed. And the Lord says, "My dear princess, you were sought after by many kings, as powerful as the rulers of planets. They were all abundantly endowed with political influence, wealth, beauty, generosity, and physical strength. Since your brother and father offered you to them, why did you reject the king of Chedi?" King of Chedi was Shishupal. "And all those other suitors who stood before you, maddened by Cupid, why instead did you choose us, who are not at all your equal?" So he's speaking these words to somehow or other arouse Rukmini's loving anger. "Terrified of these kings, O lovely-browed one, we took shelter in the ocean. We have become enemies of powerful men. And we practically abandoned our royal throne." So Krishna was hiding at one point. He left everything and set up Dwarka in the ocean. "Oh, fine-browed lady, women are usually destined to suffer." This is a good one. "When they stay with men whose behavior is uncertain and who pursue a path not approved by society." So women should get good husbands. It's one of the hardest things to do, to find good husbands for women nowadays. It's really hard. People come to me, "Maharaj, can you find me a husband?" You're asking the impossible. It's easier to go around the world walking than find a good husband. So, there's too many rascals nowadays. Men are all they're only interested in sex life. It's hard to find good husbands nowadays. Anyway, "We have no material possessions, and we are dear to those who are similarly have nothing. Therefore, O slender one, the wealthy hardly ever worship me." He says, "I have nothing. I don't have any material." And those who are actually wealthy, they don't worship me. "Marriage," this is a good one. Listen to this. "Marriage and friendship are proper between two people who are equal in terms of their wealth, birth, influence, physical appearance, and capacity for good progeny, but never between superior and inferior. This is a very good thing. Sometimes we see in our society people marry. The husband's 52 and the wife's 27. Haribo. Good luck. It doesn't work. Marriage should be of equal capacity, both in age and in what we say, all these things here, birth, influence, physical appearance, good progeny, like that. Marriage and friendship always are done between equals, not between inferiors and superiors. So making a perfect marriage arrangement is hard these days because of this consideration. But that is the basis of successful friendship and successful marriage. O Vidarbhi, King Bhishmaka was the king of Vidarbha, she was called Vidarbhi. Not being far-sighted, you didn't realize this, and you therefore chose us as your husband. Even though we have no good qualities and are glorified only by deluded beggars. Krishna says, my glory comes from deluded beggars. That's the sannyasis, you know. Sannyasis are beggars, and most of the time we're deluded. Now you should definitely accept a more suitable husband, a first-class man of royal order, who can help you achieve everything you want, both in this life and the next. Kings like Shishupal, Salva, Jarasandha, Dantavarka all hate me, O beautiful thighed one, and so does your elder brother Rukmi. It was to dispel the arrogance of these kings that I carried you away, my good woman, for they were blinded by the intoxication of power. My purpose was to curb the strength of the wicked. We care nothing for wives, children, and wealth. Always satisfied within ourselves, we do not work for body and home, but as a light, we merely witness. Krishna is saying, I'm not interested in all these things. At first he tells her she made the wrong choice and who she should choose. Now he says, I'm not even interested in marriage. Sukadeva Goswami said, Rukmini had thought herself especially beloved by the Lord because he never left her company. By saying these things to her, he vanquished her pride, and then he stopped speaking. Krishna doesn't like pride. If a devotee gets a little proud of some, what we say, anything, proud of, sometimes you do some nice service, you get some remuneration, some recognition, and people say, well done, or somebody gives you some money or some praise, or anything, or if you're proud of, you can lead nice kirtans, if you're proud, if you can dance, if you're proud, if you can eat less prasadam than everybody else, if you're proud of anything, that pride is seen by Krishna as something that he likes to smash. Krishna's expert at smashing pride. So he arranges something to happen where your pride gets smashed. He shows you what a fool you are. Sometimes he drops you down lightly. Sometimes he drops you pretty hard. Depends on how attached you are. So he did that with Rukmini because he never left her. And she was feeling a little special. I mean, if the Supreme Personality of Godhead never left someone, was always with, there would be a certain element of feeling special or proud. Naturally would enter. Krishna doesn't like that. So somehow or other he arranged this thing to crush her pride. So she wasn't ready for that. By saying this, he had vanquished her pride and then he stopped speaking. Goddess Rukmini had never before heard such unpleasantries from her beloved the Lord of the universe, and she became frightened. A tremor arose in her heart, and a terrible anxiety, she began to cry. Listen to this. With her tender foot, effulgent with reddish glow of her nails, she scratched the ground, and tears darkened by her eye makeup sprinkled her kumkum reddened breasts. Then she stood face downward, her voice choked up by extreme sorrow. Rukmini's mind was overwhelmed with unhappiness, fear, and grief. Her bangle slipped from her hand, and her fan fell to the ground. In her bewilderment, she suddenly fainted, her hair scattered all about as her body fell to the ground, like a plantain tree blown over by a wind. Krishna didn't expect this. He didn't expect this. Seeing that his beloved was so bound to him in love and that she could not understand the full meaning of his teasing, merciful Lord Krishna felt compassion for her. Then he changed his mood. The Lord quickly got down from his bed, manifested four arms. He picked her up, gathered her hair, and caressed her face with his lotus hand. Wiping her tear-filled eyes and her breasts, which were stained by tears of grief, the Supreme Lord, the goal of his devotees, embraced his chaste wife, who desired nothing but him. O King, expert in the art of pacification, Sri Krishna tenderly consoled pitiable Mukmini, whose mind was bewildered by his clever joking, and who did not deserve to suffer. The Supreme Lord said, O Vidarbha, do not be displeased with me. I know that you are fully devoted to me. I was only speaking in jest, dear lady, because I wanted to hear what you would say. I also wanted to see your face with lips trembling in loving anger, the reddest corners of your eyes, throwing sidelong glances, and a line of beautiful eyebrows knit in a frown. Here, this is a good one. Note this statement. Don't leave before you hear this statement. Jai Govardhan, you have to hear this statement before you leave. This is very important for householders to know this. The greatest pleasure worldly householders can enjoy at home is to spend time joking with one's beloved wives. My dear timid and temperamental one. So Prabhupada said, in household life, sometimes we see there is not much pleasure. But there is one pleasure in household life. Somehow or other, if you can exchange jokes with your wife, this is the highest pleasure in household life. So, those of you who are in household life or looking for household life, know that there is some happiness there. You can joke with your wife or husband. Okay, you can go if you like. It's an important message to know. So that's Sukadeva Goswami said, O King, Queen Vidarbha was fully pacified by the Supreme Personality of Godhead and understood his words had been spoken in jest. She gave up her fear that her beloved would reject her. So it gets better here. Rukmini said, actually, what you have said is true. O lotus-eyed one, I am indeed unsuitable for the Almighty Personality of Godhead. What comparison is there between the Supreme Lord, who is the master of the three primordial deities, and who delights in his own glory, and myself, a woman of mundane qualities, whose feet are grasped by fools? Yes, my Lord Urukrama, you lay down within the ocean as if afraid of the material modes, and thus, in pure consciousness, you appear within the heart as the Supersoul. You are always battling against foolish material senses. And indeed, even your servants reject the privilege of royal dominion, which lead to the blindness of ignorance. Now she's glorifying Krishna. Your movements, inscrutable even for sages, who relish the honey of your lotus feet, are certainly incomprehensible for human beings who behave like animals. And just as your activities are transcendental, O powerful Lord, so too are those of your followers. You possess nothing because there is nothing beyond you. Even the greatest enjoyers of tribute, Brahma and the other demigods, pay tribute to you. Those who are blinded by their wealth and absorbed in gratifying their senses do not recognize you in the form of death. But to the gods, the enjoyers of tribute, you are the most dear, as they are to you. You are the embodiment of all human goals, and you are yourself the final aim of life. Desiring to attain you, O powerful Lord, intelligent persons abandon everything else. It is they who are worthy of your association. not men and women absorbed in the pleasure and grief resulting from mutual lust. So she glorifies those who have given up everything. Knowing that the great sages who have renounced the sannyas danda proclaim your glories, and that you are the supreme soul of the world of all worlds, and that you are so gracious that you give away even your own self, I choose you as my husband, rejecting Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and the rulers of heaven, whose aspirations are all frustrated by the force of time, which is born from your eyebrows. What interest, then, could I have in any other husbands? My Lord, as a lion drives away lesser animals to claim his proper tribute, you drove away the assembled kings with a resounding twang of your saranga bow, and then claimed me your fair share. Thus, it is sheer foolishness, my dear Gada Graja, for you to say you took shelter in the ocean out of fear of those kings. Gada Graja means... What does Gada Graja mean? Who knows? Huh? One who carries the club? It's a name for Krishna. Gada is club. Wanting your association, the best of the kings, Anga, Vainya, Jayanta, Nahusha, Gai, and others, abandoned their absolute sovereignty and entered the forest to seek you out. How could those kings suffer frustration in this world, O Lotus Eye? Now she's glorifying Krishna that even great kings give up their kingdom to attain you. The aroma of your lotus feet, which is glorified by great saints, awards people liberation and is the abode of the goddess of Lakshmi. What woman would take shelter of any other man after savoring that aroma? Since you are the abode of all transcendental qualities, what mortal woman with the insight to distinguish her own true interests would disregard that fragrance of your lotus feet and depend instead on someone else who is always subject to terrible fear? You follow? You're getting my translation? Yeah. Okay. Going too fast? Okay. So she's glorifying Krishna. What woman would want any other man except you? Right? And what man would want any woman except Krishna? You might say the same. And then we get to the punchline. It gets really interesting. This is the prayers by Rukmini. These are deep prayers of love. Because you are suitable for me, I have chosen you, the master and the supreme soul of all worlds, who fulfills our desires in this life and in the next. May your feet, which give freedom from illusion, by approaching their worshiper, give me shelter, who have been wandering from one material situation to another. Now she's begging for shelter at his lotus feet. Please don't kick me away. O infallible Krishna, let each of the kings you name become the husband of a woman whose ears have never heard your glories, which are sung in the assembly of Shiva and Brahma. After all, in the households of such women, these kings live like asses, oxen, dogs, cats, and slaves. Haribol. This is Rukmini. She's a nice lady. She's speaking very strongly that men who are worldly people, they become the dogs and the slaves of their women, of their wife. Right? What was his name? Alexander the Great, conqueror of the whole world. But he said, when I enter into the chambers with my wife, I become conquered by her. Haribol. Woman, she can conquer. Men can conquer the world, but women can conquer men, right? So who's more powerful? Haribol. Yeah. Now, we're getting to the punchline. You ready? Everybody listen to this. This is the verse of all verses. A woman who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of your lotus feet becomes totally befooled, and thus she accepts as her husband or lover a living corpse covered with skin, whiskers, nails, hair head, and bodily hair, and filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites, feces, mucus, bile, and air. Haribo. Wonderful Rukmini's prayer. She's describing what is the body of your desired husband. O ladies of the world. good verse for women. Maybe you men can't appreciate this so much, but the women can really enjoy this verse. Should I read it again? a woman who fails to relish the fragrance of the honey of your lotus feet becomes totally befooled, and thus she accepts as her husband or lover a living corpse covered with skin, whiskers, hair, nail head, hair head, bodily hair, filled with flesh, bones, blood, parasites, feces, mucus, bile, and air. Purport by Hridayananda Maharaj. Here, Lord Krishna's chaste wife makes a quite unequivocal statement about material sense gratification based on the physical body. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments as follows on this verse. On the authority of the statement, Savai Pati Syat Akutabhayam Swayam, quote, he indeed should become one's husband who can remove all fear. Sri Krishna is the real husband of all women at all times. Thus, a woman who worships someone else as her husband simply worships a dead body. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments further, Rukmini thus considered that although the sweetness of Lord Krishna's lotus feet is well known, and although he possesses an eternal body full of knowledge and bliss, foolish women reject him. An ordinary husband's body is covered on the outside by skin and hair, otherwise being filled with blood, feces, flesh, bile, and so on, and it becomes overwhelmed with flies and other vermin attracted by its bad smells and other offensive qualities. Haribo, this is Bhagavatam. Those who have no practical experience of the beauty and purity of Krishna or of Krishna consciousness may be confused by such uncompromising denunciation of the material body's sense gratification. But those who are enlightened in Krishna consciousness will become enlivened and enthused by hearing such absolutely truthful statements. Haribo. So these statements enliven us because we can understand that the attraction that one body has for another is simply an illusion. It's simply illusion. Why is the body so attractive? Because the soul is in the body. When the soul leaves the body is just what it is. But the body itself is always in a very unpleasant thing. Right? To make it smell good, you have to wash it every day, and you put perfume on it. You have to brush the teeth, and so your breath doesn't smell, right? The armpits, so many places, the nose, it's 9 holes, and they all exuding all kinds of nasty, foul smells, right? And you just cover it over with perfumes and lotions and soaps and mouthwash, and so many nice things, right? And then we think, oh, you smell so nice. You don't, really. You smell terrible. But well, you just cover it over with all these cosmetics. You know. Sometimes a man falls in love with a woman, and then she takes off her makeup. Ah! You know. Whole different thing, you know. And this is reality. Bhagavatam, Prabhupada says, Bhagavatam doesn't cut any corners. It takes you right to the essence. sometimes other religious scriptures, they say so many nice things. But Bhagavatam gets to the essence. What is this material world? Really, for the soul, it has no real meaning. The soul is attracted to Krishna. Krishna is the transcendental reservoir of all wonderful things. Krishna is wonderful. And when he comes in contact with the living entity, our soul, which is part and parcel of Krishna, becomes enlivened by his presence. And then we experience happiness and all good things. Everything becomes auspicious by the presence of Krishna. So this is Rukmini. She can't take anything less but Krishna. Although Krishna tried in so many ways to somehow or other discourage her, still her love was fixed on his lotus feet. And Krishna was pleased to hear her wonderful prayers like that. And then the chapter goes on. So this is Queen Rukmini. Her devotion is impossible to understand. And then, of course, you know, Krishna will please his devotees when he sees that devotees are trying to somehow or other serve him. She went out of her way to somehow or other become his wife, and he did whatever he could to please her. And this is Krishna. So whatever efforts we make in devotional service to please Krishna, to serve Krishna, Krishna reciprocates. That is our happiness. Our happiness is in serving Krishna. Our happiness is in serving the devotees of Krishna. There is no other happiness. Whatever other happiness we somehow find in this world, it's like the wind. It just blows past us very fastly and doesn't leave much. So, if we want to become happy, if we want to become Krishna conscious, do one thing. Serve, serve, serve. The more you serve, the more you understand the value of service, the more you become happy. And when we serve Krishna, it becomes, when we say, unlimitedly happy. Okay, any questions? Today's Rukmini's appearance day. Very wonderful personality, Queen Rukmini. And there's much more to her pastimes we can read about. Anyone? Any questions? Yes, Prabhu. Huh? Yesterday I was standing in the room with Murari. Murari shows me this book, Krishna Sangati, put together by His Holiness Shivaram Maharaj, who has taken Srimad Bhagavatam and the workings of the writings of the Goswamis from various scriptures and play and show this particular pastime of Krishna leaving Vrindavan. And in that book, Krishna Sangati, it describes this pastime. How Radharani eventually gave up her body and became Satyabhama. Yeah, they were there, but you have to understand that his spirit's not limited. The gopis wanted to be with Krishna so bad that they expanded themselves into queens. They were still gopis, but they were in an unmanifested form. But they became queens in their manifestation. Radharani, she is the queen, she is the supreme goddess of fortune. From Radharani, the Lakshmis expand, the gopis expand, the queens expand. Three expansions of Radharani. So the first expansions of Radharani are the gopis. All the female forms come from Radharani. And then the gopis expand into the queens and the Lakshmis. So they're all they're Vaibhava Prakash and Vaibhava Vilash. These are the different categories of expansions of Radharani. Because Radharani is the only female counterpart of Krishna anyway. And she wants to please Krishna, so she expands into unlimited female forms just to please Krishna in a variety of ways. This is all Leela, pastimes in the spiritual world. So, to say that one is one and one is the other, it's a material conception. It's a material conception. And the gopis came to see Krishna in Dwarka. Gopis came to see Krishna in Dwarka. and they weren't happy. They wanted to drag Krishna back to Vrindavan. Although they were with Krishna, they couldn't find satisfaction because gopis and the residents of Vrindavan cannot find happiness being with Krishna in Dwarka. So, this is all Leela. Read Krishna Sangati, you can learn all about it. And it's most of Krishna Sangati is Bhagavatam. He takes most of the points that he makes, he weaves this wonderful pastime. He's the master weaver, Maharaj. He puts it all together, but he's using Bhagavatam basically as the basis for that whole book. And he brings together the writings of Jiva Goswami, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and the other acharyas to bring out the whole picture of what's happening in Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavatam tells you the story, but it doesn't give you all the details. You can find the details in the writings of the Goswamis, where they put the whole picture together of Krishna's Leela. Of course, even that's incomplete. But still, we get much more through the writings of the Goswamis. Krishna came back to Vrindavan a few times. Not just at Kurukshetra when he met the gopis after being away for 100 years. He came back a couple of times. And that's described in that book. When he wanted... Dantavarka. Dantavarka was... He was a powerful king and a demon. He was a friend of Shishupal. After Krishna killed Shishupal, Dantavarka was angry. So he wanted to take revenge. So Dantavarka started to head towards Mathura. And Krishna was concerned. So on excuse of killing Dantavarka, he left Dwarka and went to Mathura, killed Dantavarka. But he took that as an excuse so he could go to and visit the residents of Vrindavan. So an excuse of killing Dantavarka, he took an opportunity to visit. And that's described when Krishna came back after all these years, after killing Dantavarka. There's a big ceremony and there's big feasts and all the gopis in there. It's really wonderful. And then Krishna leaves again. After some days, he spends a couple weeks, he spends 2 months. He's in Vrindavan for 2 months, I think, and then he leaves again. Sweet. If you absorb yourself in Krishna's pastimes, you will forget about the pastimes of this world. You'll forget about newspapers, Time magazine, what else? Yoga today, yoga yesterday, yoga the day after, yoga the day before. So many things. There's so much material that you can absorb yourself in, but if you want to find real happiness and fulfillment in life, read Krishna's pastimes. These books, Prabhupada said, I wrote these books, but you just put them on your shelf just to decorate your room. Oh, look at the different books I have in my room. But you don't read them. Read the books. Right? How many hours do you sleep? Right? We sleep, we eat, we talk nonsense, we waste time. Read the book. Read Ananda Maharaj. He wrote. He finished what Prabhupada left off. If you study Read Ananda Maharaj's early part of his life in Krishna consciousness, he used to carry a book everywhere he went, no matter what he was doing. And when he had a break, he would read. He was doing some service. Some 5-minute break, pick up a book and read. Read, read, read. Don't be afraid to read. These books are treasure house of knowledge, treasure house of pastimes. They're so unbelievably, unlike anything you can compare in this material world. We should read these books. They're in Hindi, they're in Gujarati, they're in Marathi, they're in Tamil, we got all the languages, not that just they're in, English. So there's no excuse. We should read these books. They're in Spanish. Read. This is the spiritual world. You go right into them. Right? We don't have time to read. We get on our computer. let's see what's happening over here. Oh. What's happening over there? Same thing has been happening over there for the last 1,000 years. Nothing changes. Read! Read the books. The books are... Look at Prabhupada did. It was a monumental feat. He translated so much literature. So much. He came to Los Angeles one time. He had two volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita printed. And Prabhupada had translated all the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He came to the devotees in Los Angeles. He said, I have the other, what was it? There was 17 volumes when he first, in an original set. I have the other 15 volumes ready to go. I want those books printed now. They said, Prabhupada, it takes us 2 months to do one book. That means to print it, to edit it, you know, to proofread it, to get the pictures painted and put in, and to, you know, send it to the publishers. It takes us 2 months. Prabhupada said, I want these 15 volumes done in 1 month, all of it. They were doing one volume every 2 months, and he said, I want all 15 volumes printed in 1 month. And they said, impossible. Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in the fool's dictionary. That was that famous statement he responded. And then Radhavallabha and Rameshwar, who were the two leading persons there, they had a very deep meeting, and they were concerned because Prabhupada was serious. He was dead serious. I want these 15 volumes done in 1 month, no excuse. So the devotees came up with a little counter plan. They said, Prabhupada, we'll do it on one condition. If you stay here 1 month with us. Prabhupada said, I'll stay. Devotees work 24 hours around the clock. The painters were staying in front of their paints 24 hours. They were eating and sleeping, and they would take rests and then get back up and paint. Devotees run a 24-hour marathon for 1 full month. Nobody did anything but get those books out. Everything was like high gear. And Prabhupada was there. He was preaching, encouraging the devotees. He was enthusiastic. And the devotees just put everything in. And that's a famous story. It's mentioned in Tamal Krishna's Servant of the Servant. It's in that book, Servant of the Servant. You can read about that. In 1 month, they completed the 15 volumes. Prabhupada showed, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. And this would Prabhupada, this is how Prabhupada expanded this movement. It's not that we just relax, you know. No, we have to work hard. Get up for Mangal Arati. Chant your rounds. Come to the functions. Work hard. Don't waste any time. We got so many things to do. We got books to read. We got things to do, services to do. We have projects to develop and preach. So much. And that's the key. Key to Krishna consciousness is that you forget about all your problems if you just stay absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Whatever problems you have, you just put them on the back and just absorb yourself in the service, and you'll see all your problems go away. Right? When you're out on Harinam, right? You're just preaching. You're not thinking, well, this is wrong and this is wrong. You're out there, you're absorbed. So we need to get absorbed. Absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Rukmini's absorbed in Krishna. That's her message. Become absorbed in Krishna. Okay, anything before we close? Rukmini's appearance day ki. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Hare Krishna.